difference, a 3.5 million acre false start. So the district court could reach, in defining its relief, the subsequent rule. That declaratory relief is available where it would, as with all declaratory relief, it would presently affect the party's rights or have a more than speculative effect, chance of affecting them in the future.
Why didn't you challenge the November rule, or have you elsewhere?
We have two suits pending right now that would provide us the relief that we're seeking in some way or another. One is this, we believe, because again, the district court issued declaratory relief affecting our rights with respect to that subsequent rule that's based on the delay rules. We also have a motion to enforce the settlement that led to the January 2021 rule, the revision rule, pending for the last year and a half in the district court. So we could, maybe we will.
Neither of those
sound
like substantive challenges to the November rule.
Well, Your Honor, a predicate of the November 2021 rule is that the delay rules challenged here prevented the prior administration's rule from taking effect.
I get that, but it seems like you could challenge the November rule and make the illegality of the delay rules part of your challenge to the November rules.
Your Honor, we would agree we can, but Union of Concerned Scientists shows that we don't have to, that this court has jurisdiction, that this case is not.
I'm not asking you to like reveal litigation strategy or anything, but it's just not clear to me why you didn't or why you wouldn't.
So,
and I think speaks to the capable of repetition yet evading review. If you could do this, then it, by challenging the November rule, then it wouldn't be delaying, it wouldn't be evading review.
So two responses on that. I think the predicate of your question shows that this case is not moot because the same issue is presented in the subsequent. Again, that's why Union of Concerned Scientists found that the subsequent rule that extended the safety equipment deadlines did not moot the prior rule on which that subsequent rule was based. And that's why Union of Concerned Scientists, this court said, it would squander judicial resources and the party's resources to have to brief the same issue again in challenging a subsequent rule. And especially here, where many of the plaintiffs here challenged the prior 2012 rule. And it took 8 years to get to no decision at all, get to a settlement. The challenge to the subsequent November 2021 rule would be far larger, far more complicated, a much bigger administrative record. And that record wouldn't even present the specific issues raised here, which we would again have to litigate in challenging that subsequent rule. This court, again, a Union of Concerned Scientists, said that it would make much more sense to challenge the rule that actually raises the issue, decides the issue here, whether the prior administration's rule went into effect, revise the critical habitat area for northern spotted owl, and to raise the same issue in a subsequent rule that only depends on that prior rule. So that's what we would do here. I would add.
And when you say the subsequent rule depends on the prior rule, you're talking about the effect of the delay rules, or you're talking about something else?
The subsequent rule depends on the delay rules having validly prevented prior administration's rule from taking effect. So that.
And what you mean by that is that the subsequent rule could have never come into being if, what exactly do you mean in the chain of causation?
We believe that to be true. We think it's inherently arbitrary and capricious for the agency to say to the people of the Pacific Northwest that they're only helping, that they're reducing environmental impact, economic impact, removing areas from critical habitat designation, when in fact they were adding over 3 million. And based on that predicate, that the prior rule never took effect, the agency did find that it could take a shorter process to.
No, but wait, when you say the prior rule never took effect, you're not talking about the delay rules then.
We're talking about the January 2021 rule, which we moved about three and a half million acres in the critical habitat designation for northern spotted.
Which the November 2021 rule displaced.
Which the delay rules prevented from taking effect, and then the November 2021 rule replaced, assuming that it had never taken effect. That's exactly the situation in NRDC v. Abraham, where the subsequent, where the delay, there was a prior rule, delay rules delayed the effective date, that prior rule, and then the agency issued a subsequent rule that assumed that the prior rule had never taken effect. What the Second Circuit found in that case was that the delay rules challenged, the challenge to delay rules remained live because the subsequent rule depended on the prior rule here, the January 2021 rule, never having it taken effect, never having changed the critical habitat baseline here, the northern spotted owl. So yes, the subsequent rule does depend on the challenge, the delay rules here, on their validity. So the district court could issue relief that affects the subsequent rule. That type of declaratory relief, even injunctive relief, is available where it would affect the party's rights, where a subsequent agency action is based on an action that this court finds unlawful. One more point on why we don't challenge subsequent rule. I think the respondent's brief here shows that they will try to procedurally box us if we abandon this case. They argue that the presumption of agency regularity means that when they issued that subsequent rule, all that really mattered was that they reasonably believed that the prior rule was valid, not that it was actually valid. But that's yet another reason, in addition to the fact that we've already briefed this in district court, was ready for decision for 6 or 7 months more, I think, before the time the court dismissed the case as moot. After the defendants here repeatedly invited the district court to not reach the merits of the case because, quote, events would soon overtake the challenge here.
I think the government is likely to say that the precedent you're relying on, they had delay rules, but they also had substantive rulemaking in them as well. So what's your response to that?
Our response is that it's very substantive that the subsequent rule assumed that the critical habitat baseline on which the agency acted was 3.5 million acres.
And maybe I'm misunderstanding their argument, but I think it's not that in the precedents, the equivalent of the November rule had substantive rulemaking. It's that the equivalent of the delay rules had substantive rulemaking in addition to the procedural delays.
So that was not the case in NRDC v. Abraham. It was that the delay rules, I mean, had a substantive effect, but what was at issue was the delay itself, which was issued without notice and comment. That had substantive effect in that it set the baseline for the subsequent rule. That's the same situation in Reno v. Bossier Sierra Parish School Board under the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court held that a challenge to a voting plan or districting plan for one election that had already occurred didn't become moot, not because it would be the same plan for the next election in 10 years, but because it set the baseline for that next election and the plan that would be required then. So it is substantive. Your Honor, turning to the capable of repetition but evading review, just briefly, I'd like to point out.
Take just a little bit and then we'll hear from the government. We'll give you a little time for rebuttal.
Okay. I'd just like to point out a couple things. One thing, and that is that, again, the history of presidential freeze memorandum shows that this case is capable of repetition and affecting plaintiffs' broad interests here, which span federal forests. We cite to the Biden administration's freeze memorandum and say that is part of that line of evidence. In fact, the Biden administration also delayed a rule issued by the prior administration under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act without notice and comment, effective immediately, that affects plaintiffs' rights here. So the American Forest Resources Council opposed that delay and supported the prior rule and opposed its replacement. It even affected northern spotted owl, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act rule that this administration delayed. So to say that this type of delay tactic not capable of repetition, I think, ignores the broad scope of the plaintiff's interest here and the history of this type of delay tactic.
And when you say delay tactic, what exactly are you talking about with the tactic? The delay rules themselves?
The legal question presented here, I think, fundamentally, is whether an agency can prevent a prior administration's rules from taking effect by issuing successive delays, by issuing delay rules, because they want to reconsider the rule. In this court, in cases like Air Alliance Houston and others, has held that you can't do that. And I think just to make this point, Air Alliance Houston v. EPA, this is 906 F3D 1049. There, this court vacated 20-month delay rule And it ruled that EPA may not employ delay tactics to effectively repeal a final rule while sidestepping a statutorily mandated process for revising or repealing that rule on the merits. So what this agency has done is to package in several steps what it couldn't do in that case in one, and get review in one longer delay. And the records before the court, I think this is even different than other cases that are likely to present the same facts. Records before this case show that the agency planned from the outset a three-step delay, replace process, having drafted the delay rules before, within days of the Biden administration. Then it proceeded to issue successive delays without notice and comment to prevent that prior rule from going into effect. And so I think there is very much evidence of a manipulative intent.
Okay. Why don't we hear from the government, and we'll give you some time for rebuttal. Unless my colleagues have other additional questions. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Welty. Ms. Pepin?
May it please the court, my name is Joan Pepin on behalf of Williams and Ms. Halen. This court has recently held twice, and has for decades held, that it is such a well-settled principle that when an agency action has been superseded by another regulation, that litigation over the legality of the original regulation becomes moot. This is such a routine matter that it's usually dealt with in an unpublished order. Plaintiffs say that this case is an exception for the reasons that you heard. They maintain that the delay rules changed the status quo in such a way that the November rule depends on it. And so it still has, in their view, continuing consequences. We don't agree with them about that, but that's not really a question for this lawsuit. That's a question for a future lawsuit challenging the November rule. And contrary to what Mr. Welty suggested, we do not argue. They cannot raise that issue in a future challenge to a final agency action to which it is relevant if that action remains live. But that's not the case here. Here, even if you assume their position that the November final rule in some way depends on the delay rule, that would at most establish an injury that is traceable to the delay rules. What we still don't have is redressability as a district court. And it's just black letter fundamental constitutional law that you must have injury in fact traceable to the defendant's action that is redressable by a judicial order at all stages of the controversy. And without it, the action must be dismissed, no matter how judicially inefficient that may be. It is a fundamental principle of separation of powers, going back to the founding.
Did I hear you to say that in a future case, if the November rule is challenged and the delay rules are challenged at the same time, that court could decide the legality of the delay rules?
Yes, they could decide it. Assuming plaintiff's theory that the delay rules are invalid, that the November rule is invalid unless the delay rules were effective, they can certainly make that argument, and a court could address that argument and decide the legality of the delay rules en route to that holding.
But you would argue that the November rule is valid regardless of the legality of the delay rules, and you would probably tell the court, therefore, you can't decide the legality of the delay rules because it's irrelevant.
No, we would disagree with their argument on the merits, but not that the court wouldn't have jurisdiction to consider it. This sort of thing happens all the time. For example, when there's a challenge to a site-specific agency action that is backed up by a programmatic document, challenges to the programmatic document can be brought through the site-specific action. And this would be a similar situation where, to the extent that their challenge to the November rule depends on saying that the delay rules were ineffective, they would be free to make that argument in an action where there was a live agency action to which it was relevant. But this is not that case anymore, because the delay rules that are under challenge here have expired. So there's no redressability.
Why wouldn't that be the case in the subsequent hypothesized suit also?
Because it wouldn't be setting aside the delay rules. It would be setting aside the November rule on the theory, their theory, which we oppose on the merits, but don't say that they can't make it, that basically unless the delay rules were effective, the November rule falls. That's their argument. We don't agree with it, but that's a merits argument about the November rule. It's not before this court, and it's not relevant to the question of whether this challenge to the delay rules. The Abrahams case is a case in point. The difference between that case and this one, and it's all the difference in the world, is that in that case, the court had the final substantive rule, the equivalent of the November rule, before it, because the plaintiffs had challenged that as well. And so the court did exactly what I'm saying this court could do in a future challenge. It considered the legality of those delay rules as it affected the final substantive rule, which was before the court. Because the final substantive rule was before the court, they had redressability in that case. They could set aside the final rule, which they found in that case actually did defend the intent on the delay rules because of an anti-backsliding provision in the substantive law.
Mr. Welty said that in that hypothetical case, he would expect you to make an argument about presumption of regularity, something along those lines.
There, of course, is a presumption of regularity, but plaintiffs are allowed to bring challenges to rebut that presumption. And so they certainly can bring, we've never said that they couldn't make this argument in a live case. They can challenge the November rule. They can make any arguments against its legality that they wish, unless it gets superseded, because the fundamental rule is that when an agency action is superseded, then litigation over the legality is moot.
Putting aside the November rule, what do you think are the chances that this will recur?
The chances of critical habitat someday being amended is reasonably likely.
And the chances of a delay rule?
Well, see, now that's much more unlikely.
It's happened to every administration, right? Past six.
But not to critical habitat. Yes, there have been, I think, four times in the last 30 years critical habitat has been amended. But this is the only time that it happened kind of on the cusp of an administration, such that before it even went to an effect, it was delayed and then replaced. Most of the time, it doesn't happen with that precise timing, and there's no reason to believe that that will occur. Now, will there be other agencies that will publish any likelihood of some plaintiff someday challenging one of these delays? Again, is reasonably likely, but that's not enough to establish the capable of repetition yet evading review, and I would quote this court from Planned Parenthood, said, in other words, the capable of repetition exception permits adjudication of an otherwise moot case on the theory that it is capable of repetition. The exception does not permit the adjudication of one otherwise moot case in anticipation of a different live one. If the exception swept that broadly, it would be inconsistent with the Constitution's requirements set forth in Article 3, the courts resolve only continuing controversies between the parties. So the abstract issue of what they're calling a dawn delay of a midnight rule may certainly recur, but that's not enough to keep this case alive. And also not enough to keep this case alive.
It does seem strike me as, I don't know if uncomfortable is the right word or odd. Imagine that you're right, that the November rule is going to be valid, even if the delay rules were illegal. Administration after administration could do illegal delay rules. And so long as the substantive rule is still valid, those delay rules, illegality will never go unchecked, ever.
Well, there's no reason to believe that all delay rules evade review. I'm not familiar with the last case Mr. Welty cited, but he did mention that there was a 20-month delay rule at issue in that case. You're not inherently evading review. In this particular case, the agency came out with the superseding final rule relatively quickly. But that is by no means typically the case for critical habitat rules, or for. Nor is it true that delay rules are generally short. I also want to respond to this argument that the fact that there were two delay rules suggests some kind of bad faith on the agency part. That is The fact that there are two delay rules is a pure red herring. It made no difference. The second delay rule didn't moot the first one, and we didn't argue that it did. We didn't move to dismiss on that grounds. We moved to dismiss as moot after the November rule superseded the delay, and the delay rules had expired by their own terms. I'm not sure that the fact is this first delay rule was short in duration for a very good reason, so that the agency could take notice and comment on whether to continue delaying it and whether to pursue a full rulemaking on the critical habitat rules. And this is plain on the face of the rules. And the idea that the November rule was issued to end this litigation, this was some manipulative ploy to get out of this delay rule litigation, really makes no sense when you look at the big picture. Obviously, the delay rules were there to enable the agency to reconsider, or to consider whether to issue what changes to make to critical habitat, and it's not the other way around. The final rule wasn't to serve the delay rules.
Can I just ask if there's a suit that's a challenge to the substantive bona fides of the November rule, and in that suit there's a challenge to the validity of the delay rules, then what you've said earlier is that that challenge to the validity of the delay rules would be resolved in the course of the challenge to the substantive validity of the November 2021 rule, as long as the argument was being made that, look, because the delay rules were invalid, the November 2021 rule would have never come into being but for the now, we would say, putatively invalid delay rules.
Right, and that would be like the Abraham case, where the delay rules were adjudicated in the context of a challenge to the action that they allegedly, and in that case, in fact, the invalidity of the delay rules did take down the final rule in that case because of the anti-backsliding provision in the substantive law. So, yes, it can be adjudicated in a live controversy in which it's recognized.
Right, and why wouldn't a challenge to the November 2021 rule be a live controversy?
It would be. I mean, okay. Unless it's appealed or something, yeah.
Right, so as a follow-up to Judge Walker's question, so the question was, if administration after administration is using delay rules and the delay rules are invalid, then is there any way that the invalidity of those delay rules will ever be adjudicated? And would it not be in the kind of case that we just hypothesized?
Perhaps I wasn't, the answer I was trying to give to that is there's nothing inherently evading review about delay rules. They aren't always short. There have been some cases where they've gone on for several years. Some of the delay rules suspend a deadline indefinitely. These ones were short.
Right. So that would mean that there would be a direct challenge to the delay rule itself before it expired.
It's quite possible that somebody could challenge the delay rule and litigate it to finality. In this case, they did move for a preliminary injunction and then didn't appeal the denial. So I know this court has held in Newdow and in FAA versus Armstrong that when a plaintiff requests preliminary injunctive relief in the district court and then does not appeal it, that is also a reason for finding that it does not evade review. But ultimately, this case does not evade review because they didn't appeal the preliminary injunction, because delay rules don't inevitably evade review. They're not inevitably of short duration. And finally, because review is available in a challenge to the final November rule.
Review of the delay rules is available in a challenge. Review of the delay rules available.
Yes, insofar as they affect the validity of the November rule. Right.
If they did not affect the validity of the November rule, then the validity of the delay rule could not be challenged in a challenge to the November rule.
I was making it very hard.
So imagine a challenge to the November rule.
Yeah.
And imagine that the validity of the November rule does not depend on the validity of the delay rules. If that's the case, then the validity of the delay rules could not be challenged in a challenge to the November rule.
No, I mean, if it's not relevant to the issues the validity of the live agency action, then it wouldn't be an issue in that case.
And you say no, no, but you mean you're agreeing with the with what I said.
I'd hate to say I agree when it's not catching everywhere because of the echoes.
Sorry.
So sorry about that. Yes, the issue can only be adjudicated in a case in which it is relevant to the validity of the action under review.
And can I just, I'm just trying to understand if the, what does it mean that the delay rule validity is relevant to the validity of the ultimate rule? Suppose the argument is that the ultimate rule would have never come into being if the invalid delay rules hadn't been in place, and they should have never been in place because they're procedurally invalid. You know, they were adopted without notice and comment or something like that. And that's the that's asserted to be the relevance to the ultimate rule, is that, well, the ultimate rule just wouldn't have come around. Is that relevant?
I mean,
is that the kind of relevance you're talking about?
These arguments, the hypothetical arguments, will have varying degrees of strength, right? In Abraham, it was very strong because the substantive statute said you can't loosen the rules, you can only tighten them. In this case, they have an argument that the you've heard them, you know, that the November rule depends on the number of acres of critical habitat that were already designated, and what that number is depends on whether the January rule ever went into effect. In litigation over the November 2021 rule will be the opportunity for a court to decide whether that's correct, whether it really does depend. And if the court thinks it does depend, then it will have to decide whether the January rule went into effect. But that's not an issue for this court. A very far-fetched rule about, you know, a long series of events that might never have happened might not be a relevant issue for a court to decide. But in this case, I don't think there's any, we certainly wouldn't argue that they can't make that argument. So it does not. Well, ask that the court affirm the district court's correct judgment. Okay. That this court affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Pepin. Mr. Welty, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Defendant's argument here would render the continuing consequences doctrine a nullity. This court has repeatedly held that where an expired or superseded rule or action has continuing effects, a challenge to that action is not moot. I'd like to address to the fact, well, on that point, there shouldn't be any surprise that the delay rules have continuing effects, because that's exactly what they were intended to do. They were intended to prevent the prior rule from going into effect before the agency had time to review and replace it, so that it didn't change the critical habitat designation for northern spotted owl when it subsequently acted. I'd briefly address the argument under Newdow.
Why doesn't that tell us just that the continuing effect continued until the final rule was issued? Why is that still a continuing effect?
It's a continuing effect because, like in Reno v. Bossier Parish School Board, and like in Abraham, and like in NRDC v. EPA, the delay rules, the prior rule, had set the baseline for the subsequent action. And it was a 3.5 million acre difference.
Right,
we pointed
right.
out that's the size of Connecticut. It affects the party's rights. It affects the obligations that the service had in issuing that subsequent rule. But this rule is absolutely a live one presented by adverse parties for decision here. And that's enough for the district court to, at the very least, issued declaratory relief that the prior administration's rule went into effect. We can take that ticket into.
It just seems like that's an advisory opinion for the benefit of a challenge to the November rule.
It is not advisory because it decides a real issue that has a more than speculative chance of affecting the party's rights. It presently affects them. It means that the foundation of the subsequent rule.
I don't see how it does, because it doesn't make you any better off. The November rule would still be in effect until the November rule is challenged.
Again, I think that the district court would have authority to, in finding an agency action unlawful to affect injunctive relief and decide whether a agency action that is then taken based on that action.
So you think the district court could enjoin the November rule?
It could. NRDC v. Abraham, just to provide an example,
I think that that was a challenge to the final rule and the delay rule at the same time.
They were consolidated. But what the court decided was that the delay rules were unlawful, and it set them aside. And it declared that the prior administration's rule went into effect.
In a suit where the validity of the final rule was at issue.
Maybe we have to go and file another suit, but that just goes to show, again, that the same issue is going to be presented here. There is an ongoing position or policy, right, that the prior administration's rule didn't take effect. That's presented by the parties here in a challenge to the rules that purport to have prevented the prior administration's rule from taking effect. So it makes much more sense for a court to decide the validity of the delay rules in a challenge to the delay rules. The fact that the next administration's that the next rule depends on those delay rules goes to show that the continuing and collateral consequences doctrine apply.
Do you know where a challenge to the November rule would be filed? I mean, I could have looked this up, but would it be in our court or would it be in a different court?
It would be in district court, and that's one thing that
in DDC
would be related, I'm sure, to the existing cases. But again, it would take a very long time for it, based on past practice, for it to be decided. Whereas if we were to get a declaratory relief on an issue that affects our rights now, we could, if necessary, if the agency doesn't do the right thing, as we put it, as we see it at least, file a subsequent suit.
You have no precedent where there was a challenge to something other than the final rule. You have no precedent where there's a challenge to a delay rule that did not include a challenge to the final rule, and the relief afforded was an invalidation or injunction against the final rule.
We have cited to precedent where a challenge to one rule affected the validity of the subsequent rule.
But that was one substantive.
A subsequent rule and also a subsequent delay rule. So NRDC, the EPA, the court found that the challenge to the first delay rule meant that the subsequent delay rules, which depended on the first delay rule, were also invalid. Again, this just goes to show that declaratory relief here is available because it would affect the party's rights. There's a real dispute between adverse parties that continues in a subsequent action and continues in an ongoing position or policy that the prior administration's rule never took effect. And just finally, Your Honor, I would like to point out in response to the argument under Newdow and Armstrong that this case is controlled by Rawls, which is cited in the brief, and not by those cases. Rawls presented a short-term delay like these. Evades review means evades review by the Supreme Court. There is no way we could have got to the Supreme Court if we had pressed our BI motion, which wasn't even decided on.
All right, let me make sure there's no further questions. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel. We'll take this case under submission.